Hi there, and welcome to Talent Takes Time, conversations with women about the hard work they've put in and the sacrifices they've made to reach the top of their profession in the media. In this podcast, we embrace the long game, the effort, and not just the raw talent you possess. My guest in this episode is the Times cricket reporter, Elizabeth Ammon, a woman achieving success in a male-dominated world. What I hadn't realised before I started talking to Lizzie is that her pathway to where she finds herself now was more unique than you might imagine.
I mean, I had a bit of a weird journey into this job because I have had a massive career change halfway through my career. I used to work in government. I worked in government for 20 years doing policy, nothing to do with cricket at all, and then changed. So there were two hurdles there, really. One, that I wasn't a journalist. I was an economist by trade, really. But I was offered a job by the Times, having done some freelancing and some BBC commentary and what have you. So that there was a hurdle there that I wasn't a trained journalist by any means. I'd never done any journalism training, and in all honesty, I'm a very good writer, really. But I have a sort of nose for a story and quite a lot of contacts, which is always helpful in journalism. But it was difficult to be taken seriously by your peers, and always as a woman, and you'll know this, you have to fight a little bit harder to get some credibility. But I think the fact that I was a bit older when I started doing this, if I wasn't 21, I was, and I'm a single mum, which toughens you up a bit. So those things were, I overcame them, I think, just by sheer kind of pushing, getting my elbows out and shoving my way through, really.
From economist to journalist without the traditional training, this is one of the most inspirational conversations I've had on this series. Pivoting in your career is so important. We all have to be flexible, but this is about as big a pivot as I can imagine. It all goes to show there is more than one way to achieve a goal. I speak to students about this all the time, and they ask me, how did I get into this industry? There is more than one way, and often the more unusual way will make you stand out from the crowd because you're offering something different, even if you had to take a huge sacrifice, such as a pay cut, to do it.
That is fascinating. That is a massive career pivot. And I'm really interested to talk about pivoting at the moment because so many people are having to do it, and it must be petrifying. But they often say that you grow the most when you're out of your comfort zone. Did you find that steep learning curve?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, some would say I'm, absolutely bonkers for leaving a very secure career in the civil service and going into a very not secure career in journalism, and I took a pay cut and all of those things that people would think were absolutely nuts. But I think that, that made me incredibly determined that I didn't want to regret my decision. I think that you're right, that when you're not in your comfort zone, you can find some inspiration from that, really. Through sheer having to, you need to make it work. If you've made a massive decision to change, or you've had that forced on you, I think that's a real kind of lever for you to kind of grab onto an opportunity. But it also kind of makes you realise that work is work, and actually you can find a nice balance, I think, between work and life. And I don't always get that right. I get that very wrong sometimes. But it's been absolutely fascinating to move from one industry to another industry and see the parallels and the differences. It's been fascinating.
And I guess, people talk about unique selling points in all kind of businesses. And for you, you must be unique. I can't think of anyone else who's had that same journey. And authenticity is so important. But I know that some people try so hard to kind of blend in, to not stand out. But were you quite proud of, this is where I've come from and this is what I can add to this new business, this new world?
I think I had a couple of things that made me different in a sense, because I'd come from a very different background, and I'd been quite at the centre of Whitehall and exposed to politicians, and it was a pretty hefty job that I had before, but in a sense that made me able to there are a lot of transferable skills from dealing with politicians to dealing with sports governing bodies, I'm sure you'll understand.
Yeah.
But also, I think that I didn't have to try too hard in that sense, because I'd been steeped in cricket. So there was I did come from an element of credibility in that I'd been in the sport doing sort of a lot of grassroots, actually. You know, I'd done my time on the boundary, putting dots in a school book and coaching and this, that and the other, which helped a lot. Because it meant that I was not coming from nowhere in cricket, and actually there's a sort of, I had some brownie points in the bag, as it were, because I'd done my time in grassroots cricket. So that really helped, I think.
It's interesting Lizzie speaks about credibility. It's one of the most important words, sadly, especially where women are concerned. You have to earn your stripes, and one thing I would urge you to do is have something that demonstrates that credibility. And then, of course, you have to put in the hours. To quote Jo Tung from our previous episode, you have to graft.
Yeah, there is no substitute. There just isn't. And there's no substitute for contacts and getting to know people and having a big contacts book. And that just doesn't happen overnight. I mean, it was 20 years worth of contacts for me before I even started in the job. And, you know, I'm not a young woman now. I'm in my early 40s, and I'm at the bottom of the rung because I had a massive career change. But you can't rush. There isn't any way. You don't suddenly become Henry Winter. You know, you don't leave university, write a couple of blogs, and then you're Henry Winter. I mean, it just doesn't happen. And for most of us, that never happens. But I think for people starting out in the industry, there is no substitute just for talking to anyone and everyone, really. You know, even people you would think that you perhaps don't have anything in common with, or don't want to, or they might not be useful. They will be useful, as you know. They'll be useful, or their knowledge will be helpful to you at some point.
You mentioned that you're a single mum. I mean, I take my hat off to you. It's hard enough in this industry being a mum and having a partner alongside you. What has been the biggest, what's been the most difficult part of that?
Logistics. Cricket days are long, long days. And they're also, you know, more than one day. If you're covering a test match, you're away for the 5 days of the test match plus the 2 days beforehand, which are preview and press conferences. You're a week away. So you've got to have childcare, and that's not always easy. Some days I find that I'm going to, my son's a bit older now, so he's all right on his own. When he was little, it was very complicated. But I find myself having long days because I sometimes don't have someone to have him overnight, and I drive to a match which starts at 10:30 in the morning, and that can be in Birmingham, 2 hours away, do the day, which is a 10-12 hour day, and then drive home again to then go back again the next day so that I'm not away overnight. The other thing that I found quite tricky is that whilst there are other women in the press box, and I'm not saying there are lots, I probably count them on one hand, but there are no other mums. I'm the only mum that I can see in the entirety of the UK cricket press pack, which just feels a bit weird to me. And I sort of want to demonstrate to other women that it's doable to be a cricket journalist and be a mum. Now, I'm not saying it's easy, and you will lose a lot of sleep worrying about trying to be in two places at once. And, you know, I have the other things of, I'm at a test match in Manchester, and my son will ring me and say to me, where's my PE kit? And I don't know, I'm in Manchester. The logistics are very difficult, very difficult. And the other thing with cricket, of course, is you have long tours in the winter. Now, I'm very lucky at the moment because I don't that my paper don't expect them to do the long, you know, Ashes. The Ashes tours to Australia are 3 months long, and which is fine when your baby's tiny because you can really take them with you. But when they're at school, you can't take them. So there's a lot of logistical barriers to women, I think, particularly in cricket, just because you're away for so long if you go on the tours and the days are so long. You know, cricket goes on and on and on and on. Love it, but it does go on. I sort of was really quite determined, A, never to play the kid card in terms of work. You know, I never wanted to say, can't do that because of James. And I, you know, I've had to a couple of times when it's totally unavoidable. But I never wanted to do that because I think that, that sort of plays into already existing stereotypes of what women are and what mothers are. And so I never really wanted to do that, although the people I work for are fantastically understanding. But I also wanted to show other women, and this sounds a bit grandiose, really. You know, they probably don't take any notice of me, but that it's totally doable. You just have to be prepared to be very organised in terms of where your child is. Have they got their PE kit? Have they got their drinks bottle? And giving instructions to someone else when you're not there. But I wouldn't change it for the world. I loved my job and being a mum.
This resonates with me so much. I remember reporting at an NBA game for ESPN and my baby was taken to hospital. My husband was with her and keeping me updated, but all the while I was interviewing celebs and sportsmen on the red carpet. I eventually had to run to the hospital to be with her, but I just didn't want to use that kid card, as Lizzie says. More recently, I've got better about being more open with it, and I gave up a great gig to watch my child's first nativity play. The job was interviewing an elite footballer, but I figured I'd get that chance again. But I would never get a chance to be at a first moment in my child's life. As a parent and a professional, these are the decisions you are constantly having to weigh up.
I've been speaking with a lot of women about the brutal truths of this industry. There's plenty that we know about. We know about the unsociable hours. We know perhaps how difficult it is as a woman with sexual discrimination, all the rest of it. But is there something that surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, there's one specific thing, which it's very specific. But I found that I had to be very careful about the language I used to describe a cricketer for fear of being accused of only wanting to do this because I fancied ex cricketer. Words that men could use to describe a cricketer, you know, in terms of their physical appearance, I had to be very careful about whether I used them or not, because otherwise people would go, oh, do you like, you know, you like him, do you, X, Y, and Z? And, you know, and I found that quite sort of slightly shocking. And I still find it niggles me that I have to adapt just because of my gender and not use the same sort of phrases that some of my male colleagues can. And that bothers me.
Now, did you find it difficult to make contact, honest contact, professional contact, because either the player themselves or people around thought you were trying to take someone's number for some other reason?
Players, I found it difficult. Not necessarily because they thought I was taking it for another reason, but because, in essence, I'm a woman in her early 40s and I'm talking to cricketers who are sort of between, you know, some of them are a bit older, but some of them are 18-year-old lads who, quite rightly, and I can totally understand this, you know, a woman who looks like their mother is interviewing them and you know, who isn't much younger than their mother, and they're sort of, you know, I think they slightly, not that they are in any way sexist, because I don't think they are, I think they just slightly struggled with, oh, wow, there's a woman who's the same age as my mum and she's talking to me about cricket and that's a bit weird.
You have a wealth of experience and I know everyone wants to hear your top tips. I'm sure you have so many of them. Is there one specific tip you have or an ethic that you work, that you live by?
There is no substitute for hitting the phones. If you are a journalist whose business is news and you work for a newspaper and the clue is in the title, and your job is to get, you know, news stories or at least tell your readers things they don't already know, there's no substitute for spending all day on the phone. And it, some days it's incredibly frustrating because you can now make 15 phone calls and not find out anything. But there's no substitute for that. And actually, that's quite an enjoyable bit of the job, I think. You know, you're talking to people about a sport you love. There's a lot worse jobs.
One of the things I find interesting about the perception of this job is that once you've made it, the hard work stops. It's the opposite. The hard work never stops. And Lizzie explains it so well.
I think there's a real danger of getting a bit complacent after you've done your sort of young and enthusiastic and I'll do anything and I'll go anywhere. You can get into a sort of cycle, I think, in this job of doing the same things and you know, kind of following the same routines. And I think you kind of have to try and break that sometimes and push yourself out of, you know, doing a different feature, writing something that's you don't know anything about and you have to do quite a lot of research on. I think you have to, you never nail it. I mean, I think the minute you think you've nailed this job, you haven't at all. you never nail it. You're always learning. I mean, I have still got so much to learn. It's always changing, isn't it, at the moment, kind of what people want to engage with. You know, at one point it was short videos and then we went into a period of wanting 5,000 word, 10,000 word long reads. And I think we've reined back from that and we're back to sort of something a bit different, but it's always evolving. And you do have to stay on top of all the sort of technological developments. You know, and I'm a complete social media addict. So in a sense, that's not been a problem for me, but I know it has been for some journalists who have really hated it. And it can be a really unpleasant place to be, Twitter, but sort of vital for the job, really.
Lizzie explains the evolution so well, and she knows it better than most, from someone who started out in government and social policy to becoming a journalist reporting on cricket and engaging with young fans on social media. Flexibility in this job is essential. I hope you've learned from Lizzie, and perhaps she's given you the motivation to take a leap of faith and start a new career in a passion of your own. That's it from me at the 3 T's. Talent Takes Time. We'll see you very soon. Talent Takes Time is presented by me, Alison Bender. The series producer is Gary Hayes, and Matt Alabaster has produced all our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our music. If you'd like to know more about my career in the media, you can follow me on Instagram, Twitter and TikTok at AliBenderTV. You can also sign up to my website, alisonbender.com, for more information on getting into the media industry. This has been a production for the Highway 61 Network.